Hello, my spooky friends.
My name is Cassie.
And I'm Caitlin.
And welcome in to I'd Survive. Man, I'm honestly don't have much to say for today's intro because I'm just that excited for the actual story that I'm about to tell you today.
That's so exciting.
And also, I've not watched any horror movies. I've been just, all my free time is going to watching Disney Channel Halloween specials.
Which is crazy.
I'm close to the halfway mark, I think. I'm getting there.
Wow.
I think I'm about halfway. I thought it was 140, but I found some duplicates that I put when I was trying to put this together. So we're down to 136.
Let's go. No, I was just thinking, girl, I think we need to make November honorary October because, like, you and I have not been experiencing a proper October. And I have not watched a lot of horror movies either, which is so wrong on so many levels.
It's really sad. I've not watched like my usual Halloween, like Hocus Pocus and Halloween Town and that kind of thing. I've not been to a pumpkin patch. Yes. I've not had an apple cider.
Like, right. It's not fair. Dude, why did October have to be the busiest month of the year?
Yeah.
Why?
But yeah, I can't remember. Did you watch anything, like film anything for horror this past week?
No, luckily I was a little bit ahead and then I got sick. And I was supposed to film some stuff, didn't happen. And the only movie I watched is the movie that I'm going to be doing next week. So I'm not going to talk about that.
Which has a very scary title that I'm excited for.
Yeah. It's a fun one.
Okay. So let's just get into it then.
Let's do it.
The Grudge, released in 2004, is a supernatural horror.
Ooh, I love me supernatural.
I don't even know if you knew that. I actually... Well, okay, let me just give my piece with the background information, and then I'm going to like deep dive into what you don't or do know about this movie going into it.
Sure.
But yes, it's supernatural horror that is technically a remake of the 2002 Japanese horror movie Ju-on: The Grudge, but luckily, same director and creator of the original is the same guy who directed this American remake.
Okay.
His name is Takashi Shimizu. And Sam Raimi, the Evil Dead guy, is also one of the producers.
Right.
He's everywhere. And his brother, Ted Raimi, is like in it, like acting in it, which is very common for any Sam Raimi projects as well.
Was one of them, you're going to say no. Was one of them involved in Intruder?
Yes.
Okay. I was like, am I remembering that correctly?
Yes. They both were in it.
Oh, okay.
And then our lead role of the film, The Grudge, is played by my hero, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Miss Shara. Dang it! I'm like trying to give her, like, build her up, and then I call her
Shara. You got it.
Miss Sarah Michelle Gellar.
There's no way.
Yeah.
I didn't know.
That's crazy. Actually, I was about to say that's crazy, but I didn't know either until more recently. I actually reacted to this movie, I think, on my current channel. Loved it.
I need to look this movie up again.
Was very excited. Yeah. It came out, like, 2004 was, I think, the same year or like a year later than with Buffy ending.
Interesting.
What have you seen Sarah in, like, the Scooby-Doo movies? I Know What You Did Last Summer.
I Know What You Did Last Summer, Scooby-Doo. I'm sure there's something else I've seen her in. But, and like, my sister was a massive Buffy fan growing up.
Cool.
So, like, my sister's obsessed with her. So, like, I've seen her around my house since I was a small child. Just pictures and posters and DVD sets and, you know, the whole thing. So
cool. Yeah, this is a Sarah movie. So this movie had a $10 million budget and it ended up making $187 million at the box office. So it did good. It did really good.
I'll say.
I also have to say that I have vivid memories of when this movie was being promoted in 2004 because the movie poster scared the shit out of me.
Valid.
And I have, like, genuinely a core memory. I was probably 7 years old and I remember grocery shopping at Piggly Wiggly. Okay.
Oh, okay. Yeah. For sure.
With my mom. And there was a movie section at the grocery store where this huge Grudge poster was hanging. And I was like, I stared at it. I was like, that's coming for me tonight. Like, I'm dying tonight. What is that?
That's kind of wild that they made a nice big blow up version of that poster.
At the grocery store?
At the grocery store. It's kind of crazy. Like, we scarred children on the daily.
Literally, I was scared of it, very scared of it as a child. But then I finally watched it for the first time. I think it was like a year or so ago. Mm-hmm. I reacted to it. So I want to ask, like, sure. What do you know? I know that you know the movie poster. You've seen that movie poster before. And I also have to say, I was so selfishly happy when you were like, I don't have plans to react to that. And I was like, let me step in. Listen, I cannot wait.
I'm not going to lie. This is one of those ones where I'm like, I know people are going to get mad at me for not watching it, but they'll get over it. Mm-hmm. But for The Grudge, because in my mind, I always thought of it as a Japanese horror film.
Yeah.
I did not know there were two versions of it at all. And I know, like, about the pale face, long dark hair. Like, I've seen that. Aside from that, I do not know anything about this movie. I didn't even know Sarah Michelle was in it. So,
right. Yeah. Okay, that's amazing. I will say, going into it, something that's going to make this movie a little different from what we've done previously on the podcast is that it is told in a non-linear format. We're going to be like jumping around a bit, and it's a little bit more mystery heavy. It's very surprisingly story driven for a horror movie, which I love.
For sure.
So here we go.
Let's do it.
We open with a black screen and a quote, and the quote says, "When someone dies in the grip of a powerful rage, a curse is born. The curse gathers in that place of death. Those who encounter it will be consumed by its fury."
Oh, well, that's a pleasant way to start. Yeah. So,
yeah. Very promising.
Promising.
Then we open on an establishing shot of Tokyo. A young couple, Maria and Peter, are staying in a hotel. It's early in the morning, work commute time, and Peter's standing out on the hotel balcony overlooking the city. And his wife, Maria, stirs awake in bed, sees him on the balcony, and like flirtatiously asks what he's doing up so early, come back to bed.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? I actually think, I'm not sure if this is a hotel or an apartment. They might actually just be living here.
Okay.
Not that it really matters, but he seems to ponder on her words for a couple seconds before he then teeter-totters himself over the edge of their balcony.
Oh!
Free-falling down to the street, probably a good 10 stories minimum, and splatters to death on the pavement.
Oh, how romantic.
Like the quote said, very promising.
No, it's crazy. It's crazy how too, like, you're like, okay, so he teeter-totters, and I was like, he teeter-totters over to the bed, and then you're like, over the balcony. Just like, wait, hold on.
You're just imagining this man skipping happily over to the bed.
I was picturing him waddling like a penguin, like, back over to the bed for a second, and now I realize that didn't make sense.
Yeah, not quite.
No.
So, yeah, Maria is in shock, and obviously so are the people on the street below. And with that, we get carried into the opening credits. Like, wow. That's our little opening scene. Mm-hmm.
That's an opening scene for sure.
Mm. After the credits, we cut to a young woman riding around Tokyo on her bike. And she ends up at this family's house where she pops her head inside and is like, hi, hello. This is not Sarah Michelle Gellar. I'll tell you when we get to her.
Okay.
This woman's name is Yoko. And she has been hired by this family to be a caretaker to one of the older family members. And inside, she sees a note left on a little table at the entrance that says, out for a walk, back later, signed Jennifer. So Yoko lets herself inside and finds the family member that she is like there to take care of in a living area, sitting on a chair. And this older woman is named Emma. Maybe she's not like crazy old, like maybe in her 60s. She looks, though, to be very out of it. Because usually, like, you're not being taken in by a caretaker in your 60s.
Yeah.
But, like, you can tell there's something up with her that she needs to be cared for. So the way Yoko introduces herself again to Emma, asking if she remembers her, it's clear that Emma seems to have some level of, like, dementia happening.
Okay.
Because, like, no, Emma does not seem to remember Yoko. She's mute and she's avoiding eye contact.
Mm-hmm.
But okay, this doesn't seem out of the blue at all. Yoko spends the day with Emma, eventually tucks her into bed for a nap before cleaning up around the house. And while she's doing that, she starts to hear some like creaks and groans and thumps coming from a certain room in the house upstairs.
Oh, okay.
It looks to be like just a random office space, kind of like where they throw random shit, you know, like a, it's not a junk drawer. It's like a junk room.
I've got one of those. So yes.
Yeah. But the noises lead to a closet in this room that has an attic space like in its ceiling. So Yoko does follow the noises, of course.
Okay, period.
And she gets inside that closet and she reaches up to open the little door to the attic. And there are cobwebs like breaking apart as she does so. Clearly no one's been up there in a very long time.
Ooh.
But Yoko flickers on a lighter and leads with the light first to stand up and look around the attic.
Ew, ew.
I know. Honestly,
I think I'm more upset about the cobwebs, but...
Yeah, you know what? That's valid for you.
It's valid for me. But... I don't know. I'm trying to decide if this is like a cat or something scary because it goes one of two ways in these situations.
Well, in real life, would you, you wouldn't assume right away that like, oh, so there's like a killer or a ghost in the attic.
If
I'd be like, oh my God, is something up there?
I don't think I'd check though. I'd call somebody.
Yeah.
Just because.
I'd call my stepdad. I'd be like, can you come look at my attic?
No, for real. Because like, what is that? Even if it is a cat, like, what is it doing?
Yeah.
It needs to calm down.
Well, that's even just assuming that that's my house. This isn't even her house. So
that's
I would
so
not
true.
Fuck
yeah,
around.
No.
I would just wait for the people to get home and I'd be like, hey, I'm hearing weird noises in your attic. You might want to check that out. Bye.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I'm not going up there.
Yeah. Okay. So at first, this attic just seems to be an empty space, but the camera is panning around at like every inch of this room. Until eventually we see someone pop up in the light.
Oh, God.
And they don't look like a normal person. They appear ghostly white. So, like, they are solid. They're not, like, see-through, you know?
Yeah.
They're solid, but they are ghostly white with dark sunken eyes and this unruly long black hair.
Okay, so I do know what we're looking at.
Yes. It's a proper jump scare when they pop up, and Yoko screams at this thing. I don't know what to call it, like this thing that lunges for her. And we get this shot where like Yoko gets pulled up inside the attic completely. So like this thing is strong because she was just standing like on this.
Yeah.
Like
the
landing.
Ladder?
I don't know. Oh, it wasn't a ladder. It's like a shelf in the closet, but it's strong. It's like sturdy.
Okay.
She was like standing on a shelf, like half of her body was in this attic looking around, you know?
Oh, God. The worst kind of shot, too. Oh, I hate that shot. And every time they pull that shot on me, I'm like, I'm going to cry.
No, it gets me every time.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, she gets, you know, snatched up into the attic. And that is when we just cut away to Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Oh, my God. Yes.
The queen.
I mean, like, sorry for that girl, but Sarah Michelle Gellar is here.
So she's just like sleeping in her bed. Her name is Karen. And we see Karen's boyfriend sneaking around their room looking for clean clothes, smelling his way through what might be good enough to wear that day. And Karen stirs awake, and her boyfriend's name is Doug. And he notices and is like, oh, sorry, did I wake you? And she just nods to a dresser and goes, bottom drawer. She knows exactly what her man's is looking for.
Yep.
And he finds it, a clean red sweater. He's like, ugh, you know me so well.
Yes.
And when Karen asks him to come back to bed, he goes, I can't. I'm going to be late for my architecture midterm. So we find out that here that like Karen and Doug are both Americans in college and they're like in Tokyo studying abroad.
Okay.
Doug goes off to class, and then Karen heads over to the caretaking center that she's working at as part of her social work studies. And when she arrives, her boss, Alex, played by Ted Raimi, is like, hey, perfect, you're here. Are you busy this afternoon? Other than studying for an upcoming test, she's free. So he's like, great, your wish is coming true. And he hands her a case file saying, your first visit alone. And when he opens the file, we see Emma's picture with a bunch of her information. Yeah, and he explains, just make sure that she has what she needs and help out around the house. It's Yoko's case, but she didn't show up for work this morning. I can't get her on the phone. She must be sick or something, and she has the damn house key. The majority of the case file is in Japanese, which Karen does have a basic understanding of, but there's a phrase in the file that she isn't able to translate, so she asks for clarification, and he's like, oh, that says extreme lethargy with mild dementia, and lethargy being like extreme exhaustion.
Yeah.
And Karen looks a little intimidated by this. She's like, oh, I think they're used to just like basic old people, maybe.
Yay. Basic old people.
You're like chilling with them and they're with it and you don't have to be worried about what anything like deeper than just making them some mac and cheese and stuff.
Right, right, right.
She's a little intimidated by this. And Alex is like, no, it's no big deal. She sleeps through most of the day and her daughter-in-law doesn't work. So she'll probably be there most of the time. It's an English language house, so you should be fine. So, okay, Karen ends up finding the house that afternoon and she rings the doorbell twice, but no one answers.
Mm-hmm.
She knocks instead. Still no one answers. So what does she do, Caitlin?
No, she goes home.
if only. She opens the door and steps inside, calls out a hello, hello.
Oh my God.
And looking around the house, it is a mess, like kind of concerningly so.
Oh.
Things have been knocked over. There's like garbage spilling out over 80% of the surfaces.
Interesting.
So she's looking around and there's a sliding pocket door that's shut, but it has one of those blurred glass panes making up most of it. So you can like see the figures on the other side.
Right. Okay.
And there appears to be a person on the ground on the other side and their hands are like pressing against this glass pane. So yes, Karen's concern is validated and she finds Emma has fallen from her bed.
Oh.
So she's like, oh my God, are you okay? And she lifts her up and helps her back up. We cut to a little while later, Karen has managed to get Emma set up sitting in a chair in the backyard. She's washing her bed sheets, which she's hanging up on clotheslines. And now that she's getting settled, she says to Emma, like, my name's Karen, Karen Davis. I'm from the care center. I'm substituting for Yoko just for today. Then she goes about the day, ends up getting Emma into bed after a bath, cleans up the house, and of course, she ends up hearing the bumps and thumps that Yoko heard, which lead her to the very same closet.
Okay, okay. She's not going to go in there.
Except now there is duct tape taped all around the entire outline of this closet door.
What?
So, of course, I'm not fucking around with that. Right?
No. There's a reason there. Okay, well, there isn't. But, like, there's a reason. A, there's a reason the duct tape is there. Or B, well, that's some weird shit, and I don't want anything to do with it.
Yeah, I'd, like, report to my boss, like, hey, something weird is happening in that house. There's thumps. Something's trapped in a taped-up door. Like, maybe we should call the police. Like, honestly, I think that's enough to call the police.
I would say probably yes.
And she's like, okay, weird, like, looking at this closet door. And she starts to walk away, like claps for her.
Good but for then her.
Another noise happens from the closet. And the closest thing I can say to describe this noise is that it kind of sounds like a cat meowing, like in distress.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it keeps going. So like now Karen's like, okay, is there a cat trapped inside this closet? So this is when she starts to tear down the duct tape. Would you for a cat? Like, it genuinely, it sounds like a cat.
No, I'm not opening it.
Really?
I'm allergic to cats. They can stay in the closet.
No, maybe, again, the smart thing here is to call someone. Because that's, like, animal abuse. Like, you call someone if you think, like, there's a cat in there.
In my honest-to-God mind, too, it's, like, either they're abusing it or it's, like, in a cage in there for a reason. Like, there's a specific reason the cat's not being let out right now. Like, don't we have, like, another human that's supposed to be around at some point that we could talk to?
Like, Jennifer, so Emma's son, Jennifer, is his wife. They all live here. Jennifer's supposed to be around a lot, but so odd that they're not around to, like, welcome the new person.
Right. Like, that's the thing. I would be, like, waiting either to – I wouldn't open it. I would wait to either talk to Jennifer about it or tell the guy, like, the boss guy and be like, I don't know. Something weird's going on over there.
So, you know, other thing that I would think, too, because I've watched too much horror, is I'd be like, is there a person in there pretending to sound like a cat?
Ew.
You can't be so sure. So she opens this closet and there's like a spooky looking book in there. It's leather bound, hundreds of pages containing who knows what.
Yeah.
Also, there's literally a cat in this closet.
Is it a shape-shifting cat?
A black cat with piercing green eyes. Not glowing, but like, you know. But that's not something Karen has time to be concerned about, because also in this closet is a little boy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he's just sitting there with his knees up to his chest, looking down into his lap. And when he looks up, it's just like a normal little boy. And Karen is like, what the hell? Okay, child abuse.
Yep.
So she immediately goes to the kitchen to make a call to the care center, filling them in.
Yes. Okay.
Apparently, the boy won't come downstairs. Emma still hasn't said a word to her, and the family is nowhere to be seen.
Jeez. This is a little bit of a nightmare.
Yes. Alex tells her to just stay there, and he's going to be on his way, her boss.
Good.
So Karen sits down at the kitchen table, starts looking through this book that she found in the closet.
Right.
And it's a journal, and it's full of Japanese writing and drawings. And then there's an actual photograph of a man, but it's ripped in half, and you can see a little bit of the face of a woman standing next to him, but like her part of the photo has been ripped away.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And then in a different part of the house, she finds another photo that looks like it's been crumpled up, but it's of a Japanese family. The boy she found is a little Japanese boy.
Okay.
And in this photo, it's a mom, a dad, and their son, but the mom's face has been cut out. Like,
okay.
The rest of the photo is intact, but the mom's face has been cut out. And yes, the little boy in the photo looks like the same little boy that she found in the closet.
Okay, well, that's disturbing. Also, you haven't seen the original, have you?
I haven't.
Okay, I'm just like, I'm curious because it seems like there have to be like legitimate like story differences here, unless the original is also about an American couple in Tokyo. Yeah. Like, I'm curious. Sure. I'm curious if that remains the same from each other.
So it's that same, the boy from the closet, except he's not in the closet anymore because Karen looks up and sees him sitting at like the top of the staircase landing, just staring down at her with the most intense face you could imagine.
Dude, this movie seems like it's so uneasy. Like, yes. It just feels like visually, like I would be like, you know, the chills up my back kind of vibes. Like, ooh, yes. No.
It gets me a couple times, which I love. Like, of course, this is one I have to recommend. Sometimes I'm like, don't watch this movie. This is a movie you gotta watch.
Yeah, right.
So Karen's like, okay. And she starts to speak in Japanese, saying hello, introducing herself and asking what his name is. And he stares back in silence for like a solid 3 seconds before going, Toshio. And Karen's like, all right, hello, Toshio. And then she gets jump scared when this family's home phone starts to ring.
Mm.
Of course, she does not answer it, but the machine kicks in and she listens in on someone leaving this message on the phone. They go, hey guys, it's Susan. Matt, are you there? Pick up. Okay, well, I'm leaving work now, so you can try my cell or call me at home later. I just want to make sure mom's okay, so just call me when you can.
Oh, okay. Yep.
So it sounds like Matt, Emma's son, this is his sister calling.
Gotcha, yep.
In the hallway behind Karen, we see a shadowy figure of like a silhouette pass by, you know? Totally chill. And then she hears Emma muttering to herself from the bedroom. So she goes in to check on her. And Emma is sitting up in bed, still muttering and looking terrified of something.
Ew.
Like staring at something.
Oh, yeah.
Karen asks, who are you talking to? And for the first time in the movie, Emma speaks and she answers, I just want her to leave me alone.
Ew, gross.
Karen is very attentive, trying to comfort Emma and telling her that she needs to get some rest. Meanwhile, in the corner of the ceiling in the room,
Where? Excuse me?
In the corner of the ceiling, we see a giant mass of stringy black hair.
Oh.
Starting small, like in a ball, and then floating out, like almost like it's underwater, floating out, getting bigger and bigger and extending further. And it's, this long black hair, like it turns into a floating monster figure. I don't know.
Okay, listen, I've been here. I know what you're feeling right now. Do you remember the ritual? Yes. Do you remember the ritual?
And it's one of those moments.
Where I was like, girl, just don't even.
Yeah. I don't know how to explain it, but Karen gets, she's not seeing this, and Karen gets Emma to lie down, but that's when Emma sees the hair monster gliding closer to them. She gasps in horror. And Karen turns and she sees it too.
Oh, okay, bye. Movie over. I'm out.
Oh my gosh. I added like a little extra descriptor here that I came up with. Okay, so do you know the Dementors from Harry Potter?
Oh, yeah.
Imagine that they're completely made up of long black hair and are about 5 times bigger.
Ew, what? How could they? They're huge.
They're huge. It's like taking up like so much of the room, coming closer
gross.
To them.
Gross. Okay.
So yeah, this hair monster like flips back its hair up close and personal with Karen and Emma now to reveal a face. Kind of indistinct, but you can see pale skin and piercing eyes.
Okay.
And then it starts to make this noise that I do fear I have to try to replicate.
Oh my God, I'm so ready. Let's go.
Literally, I need to not look at you.
Okay,
but it's kind of giving, it's kind of giving Clicker, if you know The Last of Us.
Yes.
But like deeper and longer extended, like it lasts longer. So it's just like,
okay. Wait. Is that okay? You just watched it, so you would know. Isn't that kind of Babadook-y?
Oh, yeah, a little bit. Yeah, a little bit, but it's worse. It's so worse.
Okay. Worse. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't sound good. Like, I'm not excited to hear that sound.
And it's very piercing. Like, it's very in your ears.
Okay, I can imagine. Yeah.
So Karen is terrified, tears in her eyes, backing away slowly from this figure that's like now has a face and making this scary noise.
For sure.
And then we cut away. Not only do we cut away, but we cut away to what appears to be a flashback.
Okay, right.
Mm-hmm. Because we are seeing Emma and her daughter, Susan, and her son, Matt, and Matt's wife, Jennifer, all being shown this house for the very first time by a realtor.
Oh, okay. I don't know why, but I love like open houses and like showing of houses in horror films.
Ooh.
This is such a stupid thing that I love, but like I immediately just thought of Presence, which again, one of our worst performing episodes. Go listen to that freaking episode. I love that episode.
But one of
so
my
much.
Faves.
I love that movie. So many people hate it. Whatever. But there's like a whole section in that movie. I don't know. I think showing a house that you know is haunted as a viewer of the movie to an innocent family, to me, I don't know why I love that so much.
I know why, because it's like I love in general when you can take something so ordinary and everything that's happening is like there's nothing scary happening. It's completely ordinary and normal, but you have the context to know that this place is not ordinary and normal.
Yes.
So yeah, I love that too. I never thought of that as a trope, but being shown a house is definitely a trope in horror, specifically paranormal.
Right.
That I also love. Yeah. Oh. Mind you, Emma seems to be just fine. No exhaustion, no dementia,
nothing. Okay.
Yeah. So they're all walking around loving the house when Matt realizes, oh, where's mom? And they end up finding her in the room with the closet. And she's just staring up at the ceiling very intensely. And they're asking her, what's wrong? But now she won't talk. So she like walked in making chitter chatter with everyone, being completely fine. But then during that tour is drawn to that room. And that's just where you see it take over, where something has happened and she's not okay.
That's crazy. Because what I was ready for you to set up here was that like living in this house for an extended period of time, like did something to her. But like for it to be like, bang, done. Is crazy. That's crazy.
And just her is interesting.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the realtor is still downstairs, and in one of the bathrooms, he notices that the tub is full of water. So he kind of like rolls his eyes and is like, all right, let me take care of this before the family sees this. This is kind of gross. So he rolls up his sleeves, sticks his hand in the tub.
Ew.
And when he does, someone's hand grabs his arm from within the water. He yells, throws himself back to find a wad of long black hair in his hand now.
Oh my God, that's grosser than anything paranormal. I'm
sorry. Hair in horror is underrated. It's gross. It's terrifying.
Have you seen the scene from it? Yeah.
Yes.
That is so nasty.
That has stuck with me. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Always.
Okay. So he's just sitting there on the floor like, what the fuck? But then Matt comes down and sticks his head in the bathroom and is like, hey, we'll take it.
Like, yay. Everything's gone so well today.
Yeah. Like, clearly, why wouldn't they want to take this house? Mom is traumatized by one of the rooms, but you're like, it's perfect. Okay.
Literally. Like, especially because I feel like I'm not like a big believer in paranormal and all that stuff, but like, I think the vibes do matter. Yes. And if I walk into a house and that happens, I'm like,
no,
I don't think so.
My mom is acting weird staring at a corner of her room.
Yeah,
I'll be like, well, let's leave now.
I think we're good.
But of course, the realtor's like, great.
Yeah.
And we just fade to black. We skip to maybe a week or so later. It's morning time, and Jennifer is sitting with a cup of coffee in the kitchen. Matt comes in, having just woken up, and kisses her on the cheek with a good morning. I also want to say that in this scene, he refers to her as kiddo, his wife as kiddo. And I'm like, that's weird. But then it just keeps going, and I don't think I'm supposed to think it's weird, but I think it's weird.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, after saying good morning to his wife, he then peeks into his mom's bedroom off the kitchen and is like, I hope mom's all right. She's pretty much been sleeping since we got here. And Jennifer corrects him, going, not at night. And Matt's not bothered. He's like, well, I'm sure it's just the move. Pretty soon she'll be back on schedule. Like, jet lag is crazy, right?
Yeah. Whatever you say.
Yeah. He also suggests, maybe you should say something to the helper. What's her name? And Jennifer answers, Yoko. Mm. And Matt's like, yeah, maybe she can suggest something. Like, maybe she's dealt with something like this.
Right.
And then Matt keeps trying to, like, make morning small talk, but Jennifer's really out of it and just staring over at Emma's bedroom, clearly really worried. So Matt's like, all right, come on, what's wrong? And she says, I went for a walk yesterday just to explore, and I got so lost, and I couldn't find anyone who spoke English to help me. And Matt promises that this will get easier soon, and if it doesn't, he'll just have to tell his company that they need to go back to the States with or without his old job. So Jennifer's very comforted by this, and we cut to her going to the grocery store where she's trying to decipher what all of, like, the different Japanese food is.
Oh, yeah.
Which then transitions to her back at home taking a nap on the couch with a mostly eaten bowl of ramen on the coffee table next to her.
Fair enough.
But then a sharp noise wakes her up, and she jolts up to see that her ramen and her glass of water on the coffee table have been knocked down to the floor. And the pocket door to Emma's room is open right off of this living space.
Uh-huh.
And Emma is sitting up in bed. So Jennifer sees this, and she assumes that it was her. Like, Emma got up and, like, knocked stuff over and then went back to bed? Question mark.
Yeah, okay.
So she goes, if you want something, all you have to do is say so. But then when Jennifer stands up and looks down at the ground, there's, like, ramen juice and water spilled everywhere, and she sees a set of footprints leading away from the mess.
Ooh, yes.
Yeah. This movie has a lot of fun tropes that they do really well.
Yeah.
Which just couldn't have been Emma, you know, based on where they start and where they're going. So Jennifer follows the footprints, and they lead her to the stairs where the black cat with green eyes is standing and meowing at her before, like, skittering up the first landing of the staircase. Jennifer follows at a bit of a distance and then watches as, like, a pair of little arms reaches out and grabs the black cat.
Ooh.
From around the corner. So she's terrified.
Yeah. Hello.
It should just be her and Emma in the house right now.
Yeah.
And of course she calls. Oh, and she's, like, confused by this cat. She's like, "What? Whose cat is this? Like, this is not their cat."
That's also fair.
But also, who do these little arms belong to? Who's in my house?
Uh-huh.
So of course she has to call out, who's there?
Oh, yep.
There's no answer. So she follows the little creaks and groans of the house, and they lead her into that room with the closet, and we watch her go inside before the door slams closed behind her.
Okay.
Now, in that situation, I probably would I? Because now it's different when you're the owner of the house. Like, this
Absolutely.
Is my home. I might be more inclined to explore what's going on.
Why, for some reason, this situation, yeah, it feels, why do I feel like I would check in this situation? It's not that different from what we were saying earlier, where I was like, I'll call somebody, but.
Right.
I mean, I gotta know. I don't
she
know.
She saw the cat. Like, she knows there's a cat.
Yeah, that's
and,
true.
And, like, the arms are so little. It's like, what's going on? Like,
yeah,
it
that's
looks
fair.
Like a kid. Okay, that night, Matt gets home from work, and the house is even more of a mess. Garbage strewn everywhere. He's calling out for Jennifer, and the house is very still and quiet.
Oh.
He finds his mom, Emma, in her bed, and is like, Mom, are you all right? Where's Jennifer? And Emma just looks toward the staircase and doesn't say anything.
Ugh.
So Matt, of course, ends up in that room upstairs. But when he tries to turn on the lights, like, the switch isn't working. Everything else in the house is working, but just the lights in this room are not working.
Oh, okay. Yep, of course.
And in the darkness of this room, we can hear heavy, shallow breathing.
Like, no, bye. No, I know he has to check. I know he has to check because, like, we can't find Jennifer.
He's worried. Yeah, he thinks, like, Jennifer is somewhere.
Okay.
Matt makes his way to the nightstand next to a bed that they have set up in here and turns on the lamp, which turns on, like it illuminates.
Yep.
And we see Jennifer lying in the bed.
Oh, okay.
And for half a second, Matt smiles and is like, oh, you scared me. But then he really looks at her and this is not a normal sight.
Okay.
She's just lying like flat as a board on this bed, like very stiff.
Yep.
Eyes wide and teary.
Ew.
She's like crying.
No.
But she's like stuck in a like a board.
Okay. And yeah.
The breathing is coming from her. She's like struggling to take these wheezing slow breaths.
What the frick?
So he's asking her what's wrong, what happened, and her eyes are tracking him, but like she's struggling to breathe, so she can't respond.
Oh yeah.
It sounds like it gets to a point where it sounds like she's choking. And when Matt says that he's gonna call an ambulance, that's when the little boy, Toshio, pops up from the other side of the bed and hisses at him.
Hissing children are not something I love.
This is the first time we're seeing Toshio here because we just saw Toshio, like Karen, Sarah Michelle Gellar saw him and was like concerned. But he's here now too. Matthew's like, what the fuck? Like, who are you? Like, who is this little boy?
For real.
And Toshio opens his mouth and lets out like a demonic scream.
Oh my God.
That causes Matt to stumble back and fall over, taking the lamp with him. And on the wall in the lamp's light, we see a literal shadow for just like a flicker of a second above Jennifer in the bed.
Oh.
And then Jennifer shoots up in bed, gasps for one last breath before falling back, and she's no longer breathing, like she's dead.
Okay. It sounds like a little possession moment. I don't know though. Like but for what reason, if you're not going to like use the host, if the host is now dead?
Yeah, motive is interesting. So Matt has backed himself into a corner at this point, and in the background, we hear like the pitter-patter of quick footsteps running around the room.
Oh, that's a good one.
Toshi, a little kid footsteps are so scary for what?
So scary. And especially if they like do a good job of making them move.
The sound design, like it switches from one headphone to the other, like back and forth.
I'm such a slut for that. Like it's so annoying. Every time it happens in a movie, I have to bring it up. I'm like, oh my God, did you hear that? That was so good.
No, I'm the same way. I love when they do that.
Uh-huh.
So that's what's happening. And eventually, like, Matt looks up and just sees, like, literally looks up, like, neck cranked back, and sees Toshio's face above him.
Oh.
And Toshio opens his mouth and lets out another demonic scream before we cut away. Again.
Oh my God, how cute.
And this is our first survivability check-in.
Yeah. I mean, not everybody's alive. A lot of people are dead. People are dying.
People are dying. Well, we have Peter from the beginning that just launched himself over a balcony. We don't know what happened there.
Oh, that's so true.
And now we have Jennifer, who just died in bed.
Wait a second.
Yeah. His wife.
Wait, but didn't the guy at the beginning say that she was around, or was that somebody else?
Oh, that she like, okay, so you're thinking of Alex telling Karen that Jennifer should be, she doesn't, he just knows that she doesn't work and she should be around. But then when Karen showed up, she wasn't there. So it's like, how long ago? What do they know? What do they not know? Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. This is, we talk about this whenever, you know, I love that we do paranormal because I'm a paranormal lover, but paranormal is so much harder to judge.
Yes.
Because it's essentially magic and what are you going to do? I'm hoping we come back to Peter. I think we'll come back to Peter. So I'm going to I'm going to step away from Peter. He stepped off the balcony. And sorry, that's not okay. dude, I don't know. I think I was going, I think you're right. Like, I think I'm going in that room and whatever happened in there, not so great.
Yeah. It doesn't seem something that you can just walk away from, you know?
Exactly.
Sometimes people, like, death happens because we don't know exactly. I mean, technically this death happened on camera, but it's what led up to it that matters.
Yes.
And we don't know what happened. But sometimes in certain movies, like a slasher, it's like, well, I'm not going to put too much weight on it because maybe I could have handled it. We don't know how it went. But when you know it's something paranormal, it's like, well, fuck, I probably wouldn't have survived that.
Exactly. So like I'm in that particular situation, I'm giving myself between a 5 and a 10, right?
Yeah.
Just because, yeah, there's still a chance. But I don't know who, like, so how do you recommend, like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm like, okay, I don't think my overall score is obviously not like a 5 to 10 right now because Sarah is still alive. I'll bump myself 76 right now.
Okay. I think we have similar thought processes here. I did 68.
Okay.
Just because, like, I was like, yeah, I seem pretty screwed. And it seems like pretty soon everyone else is going to be too. Like, that's the vibe you're getting here. But, you know, with so many people alive, it's like you got to take that into account for now.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Now we are cutting back to Karen. We left off with her trying to take care of Emma and witnessing that huge hair monster situation.
Yeah. Okay. Like, what are we doing? What's up?
Alex, her boss, has finally arrived and he doesn't know where Karen is at first, but he finds Emma in her bed. And he's like, Mrs. Williams, like, are you all right? And he rushes closer, but by the paleness and stillness of Emma, it is clear that she is dead.
Oh.
So Alex staggers backwards, and that is when he notices Karen curled up in the corner of this room, just looking terrified. As terrified as, like, we last saw her. Like, she's still shaking. Like, she can, the echoes of what happened are still, like, happening in her brain, you know?
Right.
He tries to get through to her, calling out Karen's name multiple times, but Karen is in her own world. She's not hearing or seeing anything around her right now. So, the police and ambulance show up to take care of Emma. Among the crew of people here at the scene is Detective Nakagawa, and he informs Alex that Karen is very shaken and they'd like to have her stay in the hospital for the night under evaluation.
Honestly, that, like, take me to the hospital.
Yeah.
Like, please,
I feel so
do.
Safe when we're in a hospital in a horror movie.
Exactly.
For the most part.
I mean, I had a couple flashes in my mind there. I was like, well, no.
Yeah.
But
go back to the Scream franchise.
No, that was
so sorry to bring that up.
Rude. I'm upset. Okay, it's fine. You know what? I don't even remember what I was gonna say now, and I don't even care.
Then the detective shows Alex a picture and asks if he knows the people in it, and Alex does. He says that's Matthew Williams and his wife Jennifer. They're the couple that hired our caretaking services. And the detective asks when the last time he saw them was. Alex shrugs and is like, not for a while. Honestly, not since they first registered with us.
How long ago was that?
Yeah, it's not made clear, but
if
I had to guess, I would guess a couple weeks.
Oh, boy.
Nakagawa lets Alex know we've spoken to his employer. He hasn't shown up for work today. Matthew hasn't.
Uh-huh.
Which, like, I don't know why, but this is always one of the more chilling parts of, like, a horror story or even a true crime, like, story. The part where the person does not show up where they're supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why it terrifies me. Like, it gives me chills every time.
Yeah, because, like, confirming something is off.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. But yeah, Alex doesn't really have much to say about this. It's like it's a lot of information at once. And the detective can see he's overwhelmed. So he just gives him his card and is like, we'd appreciate it if you would come down tomorrow to make a statement. But before the detective leaves, Alex is like, wait, Karen was just a substitute today. Yoko is the girl who's normally in charge of Emma.
Yeah.
She's also been missing from work since yesterday. And I saw that her bike is parked outside of here still.
Yeah.
So that's all very concerning. And Detective Nakagawa keeps looking around the house. And his assistant also ends up listening to, like, that voicemail from Matt's sister, Susan.
Right.
So they're like, okay, we need to make sure to track her down and see what information she can give us about her family.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and then I don't know if I'm just an idiot, but there's like a button on this home phone that intrigues the detective. And he clicks it and then it causes another phone to ring somewhere in the house. A button on this home phone. He clicks and then we hear a phone ringing somewhere. So I'm not sure if it's like a saved contact situation and he just called to see if he could get a hold of someone close to the family.
Oh,
to like question, like, oh, maybe, you know, they have Susan's contact safe, his sister's contact safe. But then obviously it's unexpected to them when the phone starts ringing from elsewhere.
Interesting. Yeah.
Or from within the house. They follow it and it leads them to the closet upstairs.
Of course. Of course it does.
Where they find this phone, And he hangs up, like grabs the phone, hangs up, then starts looking around this closet with a flashlight. Mm-hmm. And the first thing he finds is a wad of long black hair.
Of course.
And then he finds the attic. So he gets up in the attic, like completely.
Okay.
His assistant comes with him. And in the attic, what do you think they find?
Everybody's dead bodies.
Okay. So they find Matt and Jennifer's dead bodies.
Oh, okay.
But that's not all.
What else is up there?
The detective's assistant spots something else nearby and is like, hey, who does that belong to?
What is it?
And Detective Nakagawa shines a light on a human jaw, bottom teeth still in place, just sitting on the ground.
Oh.
And it doesn't belong to Matt or Jennifer. Their, like, jaws are intact.
Okay.
So
okay,
they're like,
cool.
Whose jaw is that?
Just a random-ass jaw.
Yeah. Now we cut to Karen in her hospital bed. She's waking up for the first time since she's been checked in and gets emotional when she sees her boyfriend Doug sitting in a chair in the corner of her room. And Doug sees she's awake, rushes over, grabbing her hand, comforts her, says, like, hey, it's okay. Your boss told me what happened. And Karen's like, I'm not sure I even know what happened.
Yeah,
what
right?
do you think happened?
Exactly.
So Doug clarifies and is like, an old woman passed away in her sleep. It's sad, but like that's all it is.
Mm-hmm.
Karen's immediately suspicious, asking, is that how they're saying she died? And Doug looks concerned because Karen just does not seem to be buying this. She's really rattled, but they hug each other and just stop talking about it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, let's move on.
Mm-hmm. Well, would you like – I would hope that I could – yeah, I would tell my boyfriend in a situation – I wouldn't, like, tell, like, a random person. I'd be, like, scared of them thinking I was crazy.
Right.
But, like, your boyfriend or whatever, a significant other, like, I feel like I'd open up for sure.
I – even if I don't, like, want to get into the nitty-gritty details, mm-hmm. I'm, like, I would at least be, like, I don't think that's what happened. Like, something weird happened back there. I like to talk, so – I would have to be sharing the tea, you know?
Yeah. No, I'm so bad at keeping anything to myself. So
dude,
valid.
It's the way I'd go live from my hospital bed and be like, chat, listen. You're not going to believe what
crazy
just happened.
Shit just went down. Like hair monster story time.
It would be so fun.
Okay, so this is when we cut away to a corporate building where Susan is trying to call her brother Matthew.
Okay.
But she gets their machine, and then we watch her leave the message that we later hear on the voicemail.
Okay.
And she leaves this message from her, like, work desk cubicle, just wanting to get an update on her mom. She's worried. It's late at night, way past the end of the workday, and Susan is finally leaving the building. But as she walks down the hall of her floor, she hears an odd, creaky groan sounding from, like, the distance, the general distance. And she just looks around like, what the fuck was that?
Ooh.
Of course, she sees nothing. So she keeps walking. But then she hears those like creepy throaty clicker noises.
Yeah.
And that seems to be getting closer and following her. So she breaks out into a run and finally makes it to an exit stairwell.
Oof, yikes.
In the stairwell, the noises finally seem to stop. And then her cell phone rings and she looks down to see that it's her brother Matthew.
Oh! Ooh, good.
She's relieved. She answers immediately, but instead of Matthew on the other side, it's just clicker noises.
Gross.
And they grow louder and louder until eventually the call drops. And at first, Susan thinks Matthew is messing with her, but which, like, I don't think I have anyone in my life that I think I'd be like, ugh. They're messing with me in a situation like that.
Nobody, like, also, you just heard it, like, in the hallway. Like,
yeah.
Like, I don't know. No.
Yeah. The only thing I can excuse here as far as her thinking that way is, like, she's in denial. Like, she's lying to herself. She's scared and she doesn't want to accept it.
No, and I understand that. That's fair.
Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, by the time the call does drop, she's really freaked out here.
Mm-hmm.
And it only gets worse when the lights at the top of the stairwell, like a couple stories up, start to flicker.
Ew.
And a door bangs closed. And Girly Pop is just staring up like, what the hell is going on? And calls out to see if anyone's there.
Hello? You know. Hello?
And then the clicker sounds come back and the flickering light turns completely just pitch black on that top floor.
Ooh.
And then the pitch darkness starts to take over floor by floor, getting closer to Susan.
Yeah, I can picture this so well. Oh my God.
She starts to make a run for it, like exiting the stairwell, and she makes it out, but something grabs her rabbit foot keychain. You remember those?
Yes, yes, I have seen those. I never understood them, but yes.
Weird time. Grabs her rabbit foot keychain from like the inside of the stairwell before the door can close, but Susan manages to snatch her keychain back. The rabbit foot breaks off, but Susan also manages to like get a look at what grabbed her before the door swings closed. Uh-huh. And it is like a very pale little woman with sunken mm-hmm. eyes and long black hair.
Mm-hmm.
The same face that Karen saw before Emma was killed in her bed.
Right.
Of course, Susan doesn't know any of the connections that we know, but she knows that whatever the fuck just happened is terrifying.
Yeah.
And she goes running to the security office on this floor.
Okay.
Where a guard is still stationed.
Okay, let's go.
Smart. He can tell she's in distress. He's immediately concerned, but she can barely get out any in English what just happened. So she's like having even a harder time trying to put Japanese together to explain. Yeah.
Okay. I didn't think about that.
Yeah, I know. That's like another little scary thing about just being in a foreign country, a foreign language country where like you need to be able to communicate quickly and effectively in a situation like this. I didn't even think about that, like how scary that is, being like, something just happened, but I can't tell you.
But I can't communicate it with you. That's crazy. Yeah.
In Japanese, she does end up saying, "On the 10th floor, there is something strange." Like, that is what she's able to get across.
You know what? Fair enough.
Yeah. And this guard just looks at her and, like, is worried, has her sit down, tries to calm her. So he has her stay in his office while he goes to check out the 10th floor.
Okay. Okay.
She watches him walk down the hall on the security cam footage, you know, because this is, like, one of those rooms where, like, everything is there.
Okay, cool. This is cool.
I love security cam footage.
You know, Paranormal Activity is one of my favorites. Yes. So, like, I love a cam.
He makes it to the stairwell that she escaped from.
Okay.
And she watches him walk inside, and he is in there for a couple seconds before he then walks right back out, completely fine.
Oh.
And Susan, like, sighs in relief, like, okay, thank God. Like, I'd rather be hallucinating than find out that whatever I just saw was real.
I'm the opposite.
Really?
Is that bad? I would rather...
I get it.
I don't know. I like to be, what's the word, validated.
Mm-hmm.
The thought of not know, like a thought of like hallucinating that aggressively, I don't know. That would scare me more. I'm more scared of, I think, my mind in that situation. But,
and like scary stuff is less scary when you can share it with someone
not
feel so alone in it. So
absolutely.
I see that.
Yeah.
But yeah, then as soon as the guard is out of the hallway on this cam footage, she sees like a black silhouette form right outside that stairwell door and start to like stride down the hall. It's so interesting how they did this because it starts off smoky, like the black... like a black mist forming, but then it turns into like a solid human figure that's just completely black.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And it starts just walking down the hall. So that's when we cut to Susan running out of the front doors of this corporate building.
Go, girly, go.
And she's hailing a cab, and she does the right thing. She makes it back to her apartment building.
Okay, good. Honestly, good on her. I think she did good.
Yep. But this apartment building has one of those elevators where you can see the floors that you're passing by. So when she gets in the elevator, she's still spooked. She's got like her eyes shut and is focusing on breathing as it rises like to her floor. But we, the audience, we see something going on.
I don't even know what we see and I'm already uncomfortable.
The little boy Toshio is standing on a floor staring in at the elevator as we pass by.
Ew.
And then again, he's standing on the next floor, like as we pass it by. And then on the next floor, he's even closer and his face is like pressed up against the elevator.
Oh, this is my shit. Like, I love this.
So fun. Like floor by floor, he's getting closer and like peering in at her.
Yes.
But then finally, Susan makes it to her floor and the elevator stops. And when she gets off, Toshio isn't there.
Uh-huh.
She makes it inside her apartment. She locks her door. She does all the things.
Okay.
And while she's sitting on her couch, still trying to calm down, her phone rings. And she answers it, and it's Matthew. And
oh, is it now?
Is it? He goes, hey, it's me. And yeah. she's like, oh my God, Matthew, are you all right? And he goes, yeah, I'm downstairs. What number are you again?
What?
And she answers, 1601, I'll buzz you in. And she does just that. She presses the little buzzer, hangs up the phone, and then literally a second later, her doorbell rings. And she's like, she's looking at the door like, that's weird. Yep. But thank God she has a peephole.
Oh, I love a peephole. I mean, okay, I love a peephole, but every time they approach the peephole in the horror film, I'm like, ah, don't do it. Don't look at it. Yeah. Because I'm like, don't get stabbed in the eye.
Gonna get stabbed. Yeah.
Yes. Every time.
So she looks at through her peephole, and on the other side, she sees Matthew.
No. What? No. No. Okay.
So she sighs in relief, but she opens that door angrily, pissed that Matthew keeps messing with her. And she's like, I don't know what you're up to. But she opens that door to find the hall completely empty.
Ooh, ooh, ooh.
And then the clicker noise starts to come out of the phone that she's still holding.
Oh.
So she drops it, terrified, runs back inside, hyperventilating.
Did she close the door?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, and she locked it again.
Oh, yes. Okay.
And then she jumps into bed and gets under the covers.
Like a child.
Yes. Okay. Which is real.
I mean, getting under the covers... No, though, because then I can't see.
That's true. Maybe, you know what? Maybe it would be better to like run to like the front desk. Run to people. Don't be alone in your apartment. But I think also it's like the comfort of your apartment. You want to hide.
You're right. It's weird. You're right that going back down would be smarter. But I do think I would slam the door and go into my apartment.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. Yeah.
Yeah. But not under the covers.
Not under the covers. Yeah. I don't know, a closet or lock, go into a room, lock it, start barricading the door. Going under the covers is kind of hilarious and I love it.
I know. It's you make a valid point and it's a good thing that you yourself wouldn't go under the covers because what happens when she does.
Oh my God.
Is she starts to feel something.
No!
Under the covers.
Oh my God. Shut up. Shut up.
And she's like, what is that? And she grabs it, and it's a rabbit foot. Like, her rabbit foot keychain that got broken off in that stairwell.
Yeah, what's that doing here?
Which she immediately throws far away.
Yep, she should. Uh-huh.
And then she looks down to see something large moving under the covers with her.
Stop.
And she lifts the covers up. To like look underneath what's going on.
Let's take a little peeksy poo.
And it is the long black-haired woman, and she grabs a hold of Susan and pulls her completely under the covers with her.
Love it.
And then we hear Susan scream before she completely disappears, and we are left looking at an empty bed.
Bro, that's awesome.
I know.
I know. Every time, listen, there's a reason. Like, paranormal is just, it's my favorite horror. I don't care what anybody says.
Yeah.
It is my favorite horror. That is so good. I'm just like geeking out over here. Don't mind me.
No, you're going to love this movie. Like, when you watch it, you're going to be just as excited as listening to it because, like, they kill it with the visuals. And
yes, exactly. Like, all of these, like, little tropey things, like you said.
Yeah.
They're just ticking every box for me right now.
Yeah. So good. Now back to Karen in the hospital. Detective Nakagawa is there to question her and like get information. They're concerned about this missing boy that she found trapped in the closet. They haven't seen him and they're like, we need to find this boy. Karen tells him that the boy told her that his name is Toshio, and the detective shows her a picture that they found in the house, the picture of Toshio with his mom and dad with the mom's face cut out.
Yep.
And Karen's like, yep, that's him, which makes Nakagawa look very concerned, but he keeps his thoughts to himself.
Yeah, okay, so that's a dead family.
Yes.
Which, like, obviously, because it's a ghost child, blah, blah, blah. Like, but interesting. Okay.
But it's nice that he knows, like, we have someone who knows that now.
Yes. Like, I'm not going to, we talk about it every episode. I'm not going to. Like, it's just nice when multiple people are experiencing things. And
When someone isn't left to just feel crazy on their own.
Exactly.
And then he informs Karen that they found Emma's son and his wife's dead body in the attic.
Yep. Cute.
And right now it appears that Matthew killed Jennifer and then killed himself, like based on like what they're seeing
on
the dead bodies. That's what they're deciding has happened.
Sure.
So that's a lot for Karen to take in on top of everything else.
Just, damn, what a day she had.
It's been a day. And that's also when Nakagawa's assistant comes in and asks to speak with him in the hall. And in the hall, he informs him that they've checked out Matthew's sister Susan's apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's odd because the door was chain locked from the inside.
Right.
So it appears that she went home, yep, but her body was nowhere to be found in the apartment.
Yeah.
And Nakagawa orders that the surveillance tapes be studied at her workplace for any sign of trouble and starts to walk back into Karen's hospital room. But his assistant stops him and he goes, they were the first family to live in that house since the discovery in the attic 3 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And Nakagawa looks at him like, bro, I know. And this is our second survivability check-in.
Dude, yeah. Like, I mean, there's like, you know, small percentage of surviving these deaths. But mm-hmm. my only real survival at this point is coming from the people that just happen to be alive. Because, yes. I mean, that thing, that's the thing with paranormal. Once something decides it wants you, it has you.
Yes.
And there's really no getting around that most of the time. So I'm just going to, you know, just going to come down a little. What was I at?
I think you were at 76, somewhere around
76.
There.
76. All right. You know what? Let's 46. Let's just make it a solid.
Has finally happened.
Yes!
I also gave myself a 46 for this.
Oh my
God.
I love this for us.
Oh, that makes me so happy. Because, yeah, yeah. I just knew I needed to be in the bottom half at this point, yep, but not too far down the bottom half. Because it's just like, it's got to go lower because more people are dying and you're seeing the gravity of like how impossible it is to escape this.
Exactly.
And it's like, it's really just luck of like you not being picked. And then we're clinging on to little Sarah Michelle Gellar at the moment for the most part. Later that day, Karen gets released from the hospital and she and Doug are on a bus heading home. And she's opening up a bit about how she thinks she saw, quote, something in that room with Emma before she died. But as soon as she starts to talk about what she experienced, we get clicker sounds. And
oh, jeez.
The long black-haired woman's face pops up in the reflection of the bus window, scaring the shit out of Karen.
Oh, my God.
And of course, it's only Karen that sees this.
Oh, no.
Doug has no idea what she's freaking out about. And at this point, she feels like there's just no use explaining. She's starting to feel kind of crazy now, especially with that moment where he's not seeing it.
Right.
And we cut to another trope, Karen taking a shower when she gets home.
Oh, boy.
And as she's washing her hair, at the back of her scalp, we see, like, she's scrubbing at the back of her scalp.
Okay.
What? And we see a pale hand, like, pop out through her hair.
What?
Like, burrowed in her scalp and popping out through her hair. So when she's scrubbing the back of her scalp, she like feels a hand coming out of her head. She's like,
stop. Stop.
She freaks out. She turns around thinking like someone was there like touching her. No one's there.
Dude.
That was crazy. That was a fun shot. The hand coming out there.
That's awesome.
And then we cut to Alex, the home care clinic boss.
Oh, yeah.
And he's at the clinic, the only one left after a long workday, as so many people are in this movie.
True.
And he's walking down a staircase, but we see little Toshio sitting in the corner of the staircase.
What's up, buddy?
And Alex catches him in the corner of his eye, too. But when he doubles back, Toshio isn't there anymore. But then when Alex reaches the lobby, there's a woman covered in blood, head looking down to the ground, just stumbling around.
Oh, okay.
And his reaction to this is like mild amusement and confusion. And he goes, hello?
Mild amusement? Excuse me?
I don't know why he acted the way that he did here. Because I was like, what are you concerned at all? Like, do you see what I see right now?
Traumatized. I don't care. That's enough for me to be I drive by like an accident on the highway. I'm scarred for 3 days.
Yeah. Like, no, literally. Dead animal on the side of the road. I'm like, oh my God.
Just like can't handle it. But no, seriously, like I don't understand people sometimes. Okay. No. Anyway, mild amusement is wild. I love that for him. Yeah. That's great.
He looks a little closer and he's like, oh shit, this kind of looks like Yoko. So he calls out softly, like, Yoko? And she just keeps walking, ignoring him. And it's at this point that he realizes that she's leaving, like, clearly he already saw that she's covered in blood, but she's leaving like a very hefty stream of blood in her wake. Like it is a lot of blood like in her trail. So he just casually asks like, what happened, Yoko?
What's up, girly pop? How you doing?
Yeah. Yoko stops walking at this point and slowly turns around to finally look at him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when Alex seems to understand the gravity of the situation.
Oh, good. Okay.
And he screams because Yoko is completely missing her jaw and bottom half of her mouth.
Oh, duh. Why didn't I even think of that? Like, of course it was her.
It's perfect. That's my favorite thing when movies can pull that off, like an obvious surprise. You know?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, yes, of course.
Well, of course.
And yeah, so that's been ripped from her face. We know it's in the attic.
Yeah, that's good.
Back to Karen again.
Yeah,
so
let's
anyways.
Let's go check in. All right. Anyway.
She's surfing the web trying to find any records of this boy, Toshio.
Mm-hmm.
And some articles are popping up. I don't know if it's like a super not like uncommon Japanese name. No idea. But just by searching Toshio, she's finding some articles.
Oh, shit. Okay.
And the titles include Father Murdered Wife and Son Committed Suicide.
Oh.
And Family of Three Found Dead in Suganami.
Okay.
That sort of thing.
Yep.
And yes, like in these articles, there are pictures of the house, pictures of Toshio and the family. And Karen is just like, what the fuck? Like,
yeah.
Trying to wrap her head around this. She also sees a headline below one of these articles that she's reading that is titled American Professor Throws Himself Off Building.
Ooh.
Right. So this article is about a guy named Peter Kirk. Yes, this is the guy from the very first scene. Now over to Detective Nakagawa.
Oh, dude, okay.
I know. He's starting to study Susan's workplace surveillance tape.
Yes, okay, I was thinking about that. We got to go back there.
And he sees that same black figure form in the hallway.
Oh, my God. Wait, so the camera actually caught it.
It's literally there. Oh, my God, I just connected something. I need to write this down so that I remember to talk about it at the end. But I just realized something right now that I need to talk about later.
Love that.
I'm going to be embarrassed if at the end when I tell you this, you're like, well, yeah. But okay. So yeah, he sees it. Like it's literally there. It's not just in Susan's mind. But he watches longer than she did. And this figure, like I said, is like a solid black human form. It walks closer and closer to the camera until the entire lens is overtaken by darkness.
Okay.
And then like a set of eyes open up, like very up close and personal, right in the camera.
Gross.
And it's so funny. Nakagawa is sitting there like, okay, great. Like, he's not even jump scared. He's just like, you gotta be fucking kidding me.
Jeremy? Sorry. Yeah.
I can't say that without thinking of him.
I know.
Back to Karen. She's writing a note for Doug that says, had to go out, be home soon, I love you. And we see her bundled up in a coat and with her purse while Doug is sleeping in their bed. And she ends up going and knocking on the door of the apartment where Peter died.
Oh.
And where Peter's wife still lives.
Oh, weird. Okay.
I think it's an odd move. I would not do that.
I mean, I'm curious to see like what she read exactly or like hear her thoughts, why she's doing this, but it seems crazy to me at the moment.
So she gets through to the speaker of this apartment, like hoping that she'll get buzzed in, saying that she wants to ask Maria a couple questions about her husband. She says it all very kindly and delicately and everything. Shockingly, Maria just buzzes her in. She's like, okay.
Oh.
I think maybe just Sarah Michelle Gellar just has a really trustworthy voice. I have to admit, I would buzz her in as well.
Yes, this is true.
But kind of crazy. Like,
I agree. Wouldn't be doing that unless it's Sarah Michelle Gellar. So,
yeah. Because I imagine there's got to be people, like reporters beforehand, already trying to talk to her about this situation.
Right. Yeah.
But I think that Maria can sense, like, this is a woman who is relating to her and maybe something is going on.
Okay, fair.
So Karen ends up meeting Maria, and Maria shows her all of her husband's things that she has packed up in a box. There are a lot of pictures, different memories. And as Karen is looking – this movie is so good – As Karen is looking through these pictures, she starts to notice that there's the same woman in the background of literally every single one.
What?
We can't really tell much with the quality other than the fact that it appears to be a Japanese woman, maybe a little younger than Peter and Maria, but she's like photobombing every single picture.
Does she look like a normal human being in these photos? Or does she? Okay.
We get a flashback to Peter. He appears to be a professor. Oh, yeah, we know. So he's a professor.
Oh, he's a professor. Okay, yes. Never mind. So I just thought of something. Okay.
He's a professor, works at a college, and a colleague of his comes up and gives him some of his mail. And this colleague is like, there's another one, huh? And Peter shakes his head, looking down at a specific letter, going, yeah, she says she used to be in one of my classes, but I don't know who the hell she is. Okay. Like, he does not remember the student. So it seems like he's got a bit of a secret admirer, like one of his past students.
Okay, okay.
And when Peter's colleague walks away, we see Peter put this letter with the rest of the maybe like 30 other letters that he has received and opened from this girl. And her name is Kayako Seiki. Okay. Who knows if I'm saying that right?
Uh-huh, of course.
Cut to Peter showing up at the house that we all know and hate.
Yes.
The house where all the shit has been going down.
Yeah.
When he knocks at the front door, no one answers. So he goes around back and sees like little arms sticking out of a window.
Oh! okay.
So he walks over and sees that these arms belong to a little boy that we also are familiar with. It's Toshio.
Okay.
But he looks like alive and well.
Oh.
Well is not exactly accurate. So, but alive.
alive.
he doesn't look good. He's like slumped against this window looking like he's on the brink of passing out actually. So Peter lets himself into the house just to go check on this boy.
Oh.
And he carries him out of the bathroom into the living room, asks if his mom is home, if either of his parents are home.
Right.
But Toshio won't talk, and he's, like, covered in bruises and scratches and bandages.
Oh.
So Peter looks around a bit and sees that a picture has been ripped to shreds and left on the ground. He puts it back together to find that it is a picture of the family with the mom's face cut out.
Oh.
Yes. Okay. So now we're under the impression here that he is trying to contact Kayako,
yes.
who has been writing him, and she is the mom in this family, Toshio's
right.
mom. And then he hears a cat meowing somewhere.
Good.
Yes. And when Peter's back is turned searching for this cat, we see Toshio in the background open his mouth super wide.
Oh, God.
And a long, like, yowling cat meow just comes out of him.
Ew, I literally just got chills. Literally just felt that.
Little kids scare the crap out of me. Like, they could do anything in a horror movie and it gives me chills.
Dude, and also just like opening your like the
wide mouth shit.
Yes. Oh my God, I never like that.
Back in the present, Karen has tracked down Detective Nakagawa.
Okay.
Determined to speak with him, and when she has his attention, she says, "The woman who was murdered in that house 3 years ago knew this man," referring to Peter.
Uh-huh. So, right.
Kayako. "He committed suicide the morning after she died."
Okay.
So
oh, I love the way this movie is taken. Like, I'm literally visualizing all of these stories starting at these faraway points, and the way they come together so well in this movie has been really interesting.
Yes, and this is, like, something that could be very hard to explain, like, when it's a nonlinear format. But, like, they do it so seamlessly that it makes it seamless for me to be able to retell
for sure,
which is, like, just props to the movie for that.
Yeah.
Nakagawa tells her, "I don't believe he killed himself. 3 years ago, three of my colleagues, my friends, began investigating a case. Two of them died mysteriously," like he doesn't know cause of death, or he doesn't believe it at least, "and one disappeared. They had been investigating the murders in that house."
Oh my God.
So Karen is obviously freaking out. She's like, "Are you saying that the detectives died because of that house? Like, I've been in that house. You've been in that house."
Uh-huh.
And Nakagawa continues, "It is said in Japan that when a person dies in extreme sorrow or rage, the emotion remains, becoming a stain upon that place. The memory of what happened repeats itself there. Ooh. Death becomes a part of that place, killing everything it touches. And once you've become a part of it, it will never let you go. I'm sorry."
Oh, no. Oh,
and then
shit.
He just walks away, like, leaving her with the basic message of, like, yeah, we're both fucked. We're doomed.
Oh, my God. That's actually insane. Oh, gross.
And that night, Nakagawa shows up at the house with two cans of gasoline.
Oh.
But as he's about to start pouring it everywhere, he hears a child crying from somewhere in the house.
Oh, fuck. Okay. Well, RIP. Okay.
And then the crying turns to screaming. Ooh. And in the bathroom, he finds Toshio face down in a tub full of water, like drowning.
Oh.
He pulls him out and tries to help him at first, but while Toshio is limp in his arms, like his eyes suddenly snap open and stare up at Nakagawa like with hatred.
Oh my God, yeah.
And then through a crack in the bathroom door, we see Nakagawa get his head pushed down into the bathtub and okay. he drowns.
Yeah. Okay, that's like interesting to me, it coming back to the tub being filled up during like the open yes. house. Like there's like little connections.
Yes.
That's kind of cool.
Now Karen has finally arrived back home after being out all day and Doug isn't there. But there's a message left on their answering machine. She presses play to hear that it's Doug and he goes, "Karen, it's me. Where have you been all day? I'm really worried about you. The care center called. Alex and Yoko are dead. I found your research. Did you go to that house? I'm coming to find you." So this is a lot to take in for Karen, finding out Alex and Yoko are dead.
Right.
And then on top of that, knowing that her boyfriend is walking into the death trap that is that cursed house.
Yeah.
So yep. she's oh my God. Rushing to get over there to stop him. It literally runs all the way there, like can't fuck around with traffic.
Yeah. Just gotta go.
Yeah. And while she's running, we get these shots of like Doug walking around outside somewhere. We're like, oh my God, is he there yet? To yep. the house. And he makes it to a payphone where he's like presumably calling Karen again before okay. he goes to the house. But at this point, Karen has already burst. She's at the house. She bursts oh. in and she's calling out for Doug. She gets a reply from inside the house, a man that sounds just like Doug.
Oh, no.
That says, "Karen, did you get my message?" Mm-hmm. And she hears his voice talking from upstairs. Like he keeps on talking, but it's like indistinctly, like it's almost like he's talking to himself. She can't tell what he's saying.
Okay.
So she goes upstairs where his voice is coming from. But when she makes it up there on the landing, she sees like a vision of Peter on the phone, like talking on his phone, yeah. telling someone that he loves them and that he'll be home soon. So she's in the house. She's like still in the same spot in real time. Yep. She's in that spot in the house. But like the way that they transitioned it is it's nighttime in the present with Karen. And then all of a sudden the light shifts to natural lighting and it's daytime.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
And so she's like seeing a vision into the past play sure. out in front of her.
Sure.
Peter hangs up and then goes into an upstairs room, not the cursed one. In this vision flashback now, it seems to be either like Toshio's bedroom or playroom of some kind. And Toshio's on the floor coloring pictures on paper. And Peter says to him, "I guess your mom's going to be late, huh?" And Toshio looks up and stares at Karen like he can absolutely see her out in the hall.
Oh, okay.
Peter sees him looking at something and tries to look too, but he doesn't see Karen. His eyes just are like darting around at nothing. But he closes the door, leaving Toshio in that room, and he still looks around like he can sense something is off.
Yeah.
He ends up walking down the hall and entering what we know to be the cursed room.
Okay, yeah.
It's full of art and antiques, and on the floor, he finds like the little cutout portion of the mom's face from that photograph.
Right.
And then he finds a bunch of other photographs, all of the family, and all with the mom's face cut out.
Okay. And yeah.
Then he finds a journal, the same journal that Karen found in that closet. And we find out it's the mom's journal, Kayako's journal. And in it, she says, "I'm in love with someone, but he doesn't know I exist." And then page upon page are like lovey-dovey doodles all with like Peter plus Kayoko.
Oh, God.
So like page after page of her gushing and obsessing over Peter. And then eventually he finds a picture of himself in this journal and he is thoroughly freaked out.
Oh.
It seems like he showed up at this house today for the first time to try and like confront Kayoko and okay. tell her to stop sending him letters.
Interesting. See, because when you were first bringing up the professor, like when we got to that point where it was starting mm-hmm. to seem like there was a connection, I was worried about a professor-student situation
yes.
where he was a creep. But it yeah. sounds like it's not that.
Yeah, no. Just like a mentally unwell, like obsessive woman.
Yes, okay.
I also thought it was going in the direction of an affair happening between them.
Right.
But no, he's like scared seeing all of this. He's like, whoa, this is like way more than I even thought.
Yep.
When the photo of Peter falls to the ground, both Karen and Peter go to pick it up and their arms touch. And Peter like has a reaction to it, like something really cold just touched him.
Is this starting to delve into overlapping timelines where like things in the past things in the present have affected the past, even though they're only happening now in the present? Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm seeing that, like, Harry Potter 3, low key, if anybody knows what I mean, like Time Turner, that kind of vibe.
It's possible. We're not going to ever know for sure, but with what happens here, like, you have to wonder.
Like, yeah, somehow they actually, like, that is something that they actually experienced in the past.
Yeah.
That this present moment is only, it's like really interesting to me. I love that stuff.
Yeah. Okay, so he's like startled by feeling that coldness or whatever he felt on his arm.
Right.
And but he still doesn't see Karen. But he does at this point notice on the closet door, like 100 little cutout faces of Kyoko are pinned all over it. And it also looks like there's blood smeared on some of them.
Okay, cute.
Behind him on the floor, the pages of Kyoko's journal start to turn by themselves and land on a page with a hole cut out in the middle, revealing the drawing of an eye on another page.
Mm.
And then flies start buzzing and a couple come flying out of this closet.
Oh, okay. I love flies.
So he...
Cassie?
Oh my God.
I just thought of it too.
Oh my God. No, it hit us at the same time. No, guys, like before we started recording, I was like, oh, there's this huge, annoying, buzzing fly in my room. It's so annoying. Well, it's just a bit of ambiance. It knew it was the star of the show today. Jeez. That's gross.
That's insane. I hate when that shit happens.
So yeah, the flies are, there are a couple flies buzzing out of this closet. So he opens the closet door and looks inside to find that attic space in the ceiling. And it's like half open. So he opens that door, like slides it all the way open. And Kyoko's dead body comes tumbling down.
Okay.
So,
yes. I'm still not like 100% where, like, not that I should be, but like, I'm like, wait, what is going on here?
We see Peter run into Toshio's room, but he's only there for a couple seconds before he stumbles back out of it, like looking sick. And Toshio's door closes before Peter goes running away and just like runs out of the house.
What the hell?
Karen is still standing up on the landing of the stairs and hears thumping, like a rhythmic thumping coming from Toshio's room. So she goes inside and finds the husband, Takeo, dead, having hung himself, and his body is swaying and his shoes are like hitting the wall over and over.
Oh, gross. Is this the first time we've seen the husband?
Yes, other than like the family photo.
Right. Okay, yeah.
And then we get like a very quick and chaotic black and white flashback sequence.
Okay.
That shows Takeo finding his wife's journal for the first time, finding out she's in love with another man, and then proceeding to kill the family cat, their son, in the bathtub. Killing their son in the bathtub.
Yep, okay.
And then finally killing Kyoko, and then he hung himself. So it was like this moment of calling back to like what was talked about by the detective in that first quote in the movie, like killing and everyone around him and himself in this house in like a fit of rage.
Right. Wow. Okay. I don't think I expected it to come back to that being the husband. Interesting.
Karen sinks back into the present. The daytime of the vision flashback returns to the nighttime of reality. And Karen is walking through this house in shock. She passes a mirror, and instead of her own reflection, it's Kyoko walking by. Like in her ghost form with that long black hair and like super white face.
Yeah.
But Karen isn't scared. She's ready to confront her, and she walks up to that mirror.
Oh!
But then a hand grabs her shoe, and she looks down to find Doug crawling on the floor in pain.
Okay.
He's struggling to breathe, and then we hear a door swing open upstairs, and Kayako's, like, clicker noises echo through the house.
Okay, no.
Karen starts to drag Doug as fast as she can toward the front door, and on the way, we see Kyoko herself coming toward them down the stairs. She's bloody, she's ghosty, she's doing contortionist things on that staircase.
Shut the hell up. Also, I totally just like whacked the crap out of my microphone. Oh. Like, yes. I'm over here squirming. You do not understand, yeah, guys. Like, I'm freaking out. I don't like this.
It's so good. Like, she's on all fours and like... like things are popping out of place as she's crawling down those stairs.
Not a fan.
I love a contortionist. I don't know how they do that. Yeah, terrifying. And she manages, like Kyoko manages to catch up with them, grabs Doug, drags him away from Karen.
Oh no.
She gets on top of him and makes her like clicker sounds directly like in his face. And it's safe to say like Doug's a goner. He's dead. When Kyoko does that to you, you're dead.
Poor Doug.
Yeah. Karen backs away and sees Toshio up on the staircase landing, like gripping the wooden bars, staring down at them all. Very similar to what he was doing when she first showed up and he was like on the landing looking down at her and he was like, Toshio, like telling her his name.
Yeah.
And now Kyoko has finished with Doug and hisses, reaching for Karen. So Karen jumps to her feet and opens the door behind her, but then Kyoko is right there, like on the other side of the door, ready to snatch her. Of course. Everywhere Karen turns, Kyoko is there. And then the whole house starts to rattle, like the windows and the cabinets. Mm-hmm. But when Karen goes to check on Doug to just make sure for sure that he's gone, she finds a lighter in his coat pocket. So she knocks over those cans of gasoline that are left behind by Nakagawa and she lights a flame. But as soon as she's about to throw the lighter down on the floor, Kyoko grabs her wrist and stops her. It doesn't matter. Karen's ready to go down in the flames with the house at this point. And she just drops the lighter anyway. The house starts to go up in flames. Kyoko gets closer and closer until she's face to face with Karen. And then we fade to white.
Ooh.
Yeah. We cut to the morgue where Detective Nakagawa's assistant is looking at a corpse under a sheet. And it's Doug.
Okay.
They leave the room and the assistant asks the mortician, okay, how about the woman in question?
Yeah.
And the mortician answers, we're sending her here right now.
Oh.
So cut to a nurse bringing Karen into this hall. And Karen looks like death. Like she looks like a miracle walking. Like she's empty now. She's just been through it, traumatized, battered, you know. The mortician asks, how did she survive? And the assistant detective goes, we're still investigating, but we were able to save the house.
Oh, no, dude. Yeah,
of course.
Are you serious?
So Karen is led into the morgue because she has to identify Doug's body. Oh. And when she walks into the room, she starts to like break down crying. So they let her be in there to have a moment alone. And she reaches to like pull back the sheet. But just as she's about to, long black hair starts descending down to the floor from under the sheet.
Oh.
And a ghostly pale arm slides out from under the sheet as well. And Karen gasps and rushes backwards, terrified. Mm-hmm. But then after a couple seconds, she realizes, okay, it's not really there. Like everything turns back to normal.
Yeah.
Like the sheet is normal. It's Doug's arm that she's seeing. It was just in her head. But then the camera like pans behind her and we see Kyoko standing back to back with her. And like the clicker sounds return.
Yeah.
And Karen can hear them. She like hears it and she knows like, oh, fuck. Wait, no. I'm not safe. And she turns around slowly. And so does Kyoko. And they come face to face again.
Yep.
And then that's it. That's the movie.
Oh, shit. Wait, I love credits. It though. No, I love the ending.
Yeah.
It's very like inconclusive. As to like what happens, I know there's a sequel. Maybe the sequel ruins the first movie in some ways.
I just don't think it's necessary. Should I say what happens in the sequel that pisses me off, or just let it be?
I don't know. Spoiler.
I won't say it because
I want to know. Not because I want
to
watch
it. You enjoyed this so much, though, that you're gonna watch this, and you might choose yourself to watch that sequel just because you love this and you want it, and you're curious. Or you love it so much that you don't want to know what happens in the sequel.
In a way, that's where I'm at. Yeah. Because I trust your judgment. And I feel like this is something that should be left alone or should have been left alone.
Yeah, I agree.
Because sometimes an inconclusive, ambiguous ending is what you need, because anything that you tried to do was probably not going to be super satisfying. Mm-hmm. Anyway. So like, this is one where I'm like, yes, I'm already making plans in my mind. I'm like, so what am I going to do? Am I going to watch this, or am I going to watch the original version of the movie instead? Yeah. I mean, I'll eventually watch this too, but like, should I watch the original first, you know? Yeah. Because like, this sounds like my kind of movie. And I gotta say, until you brought it up the other day, I think I was morphing together The Grudge and The Thing in my mind.
I did the same thing with – wait. No, I did the Thing or The Ring?
The Thing.
Oh, I mixed it up with The Ring because of that long black hair.
You're right. The Ring has also got a similar visual. But I think title-wise, I was thinking The Grudge and The Thing were just the same movie.
Random.
Yeah, super red. I think it's just the titles. But you're right, Samara from The Ring.
I forget which one came out first.
The Ring, I think, came out in 2001.
Oh, okay.
I could be wrong. That was just the year that came to mind.
2002, so close. Oh, and still before The Grudge.
Yeah, but probably not before the original.
Oh, yeah. Well, the original Grudge came out in 2002, so that'd be down to dates. But, you know, with how long production takes, I bet they weren't aware of each other.
That's kind of crazy that those two exist next to each other. I got to say, I don't like The Ring. That's a very unpopular opinion. Yeah, but
it's not my favorite. I think I respect some of its iconic moments, but like, don't put it on, you know?
Yeah, no, same. To be fair, like, I always have to come back to, this is a little off topic, I'm sorry, everybody, but like, when I've watched so many versions of passing along something, and even though I know The Ring came first, like, I have to try to remember that. I'm like, oh, I've seen this 100 times. But most of the things I've seen where it's like one thing passed to another person have come later.
Yes.
So I always have to try to remember that. But anyway, sorry, that's a side tangent. This movie is my shit. Like,
it's so good. Like, honestly, I know it's a big movie, but I still think it's underrated.
Yeah. No, like, because you know who loves this movie? And who always has said it's their favorite movie, I'm pretty sure. I think they mean the original, but it's Gab Smulders.
Oh, really? Then you know it's good. I trust everything she says.
Same. Same here. I was, like, really excited to hear this one. I think this has got to be the, like, most chilling and scared I felt during the storytelling.
I love that.
Yes, because – you know, it can be kind of hard to get, like, you always feel like, well, I'm not doing it justice or whatever, blah, blah, blah. Right. But, like, the way you, like, set up these moments, it was like, ooh, no, like, I felt that. Like, I feel somebody standing behind me right now. Yeah. I'm trying to – there was another one that was also extremely chilling, and I can't remember what it was, but this one –
I bet if I looked back to titles, we'd know, but, yeah.
Right.
I
don't know. No, but this one
– I would love to be able to find more paranormal movies that work for what we do.
Right.
Because this one works enough. It does.
Yeah.
And they're really fun to tell.
They're so fun. Oh, my God.
So, final third act score.
Well, no, this is tricky because of the ending.
Mm-hmm.
In my world, it feels like no matter what she does, she's going to eventually become a victim of this girl.
Like, I took the same thing away.
That's what the ending says to me, that like she can't escape it, except that they saved the house, which if she had burned down the house, would that have burned down everything with it? Like, would that have erased everything? I don't know in Japanese culture when they refer to this kind of thing. Does that mean the building or the land or just the memory? Like, you know what I mean? So that's really interesting. But at the end of the day, I think I'm pretty dead. Yeah. I'm not going to say zero because, as we've talked about, there is really only one movie that deserves that zero.
Yeah. I'd love to find another one. That'd be crazy.
That would be crazy. Goddamn. My third act. Let me just focus on that.
Yeah.
My third act score, I'm going to say like 7.
Okay.
Because she's still alive and I don't know for sure where that goes. She's probably dead. But then that makes my weighted average is a 32.
Okay.
But this is an example of a movie where the only reason I was giving myself higher scores in the first and second was because people weren't dead yet, which makes it tricky. I think the second she stepped into that house, she was screwed. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Like, she walked in the house and that's it. Everyone who's walked in there has died. So I was going to work, dude. Like,
yeah, it's not like a spooky situation that you put yourself in.
Yeah. I'm going to say overall score for this movie, the number 12 is calling to me.
Okay. I did go a little higher. Well, as far as final check-in, I did a 5%, so I went a little lower. But we're like same vibes.
Around the same. Yeah, we really did go the same vibes throughout.
Yes. My final weighted score came out to 29, and I decided to just knock 5% off of that and go 24. Okay, and the only reason it's that high is because technically she's not dead yet.
Exactly.
And so it's like, would I survive this movie?
Right.
Maybe, because she did. But like you said, we both are like, well, is she going to survive beyond this movie, though? Like,
exactly. It's a little that tricky. Impression. All right. So that makes us 18, which...
18.
I think it honestly feels good to me.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. Paranormal is something else.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love it, though. I love it so much.
Dude. Also, I have to talk about what I realized when I was telling this story.
Oh, yeah, wait. I'm so curious.
So when Nakagawa was looking at the security footage, and it was like this moment of like, oh, my God, like it's real. It's really there because he can see it too. I was like, oh, no, it's not really there. He just can also see it because he's been in the house.
So like
only people who've been in the house and have been afflicted by these ghosts and emotions and trauma are able to see the manifestations.
So that what's interesting there. So do we then know that that was in fact the recorded moment, or was she also manifesting on the camera at that time?
I think it was the recorded moment, which I really like.
That's so cool. No, that is so cool.
And then that makes sense as to why, you know, the guard who's not been in the house went into that stairwell and was just like, I don't see anything. Yeah.
That damn house, man.
Right? Like, I guess I just can't go in houses anymore.
Dude, can't do anything these days.
Yeah. So, yeah, I knew this was going to be fun. I love this movie. So fun. This was a really fun episode. I do also just quickly have to say, I did watch a freaking horror movie that I've not talked about yet on the podcast. It's called Pet Sematary.
That's right.
And I will be begging Caitlin to watch that until she does.
I'm excited. I know it's Stephen King, so.
Well, right. Like, if it wasn't Stephen King, I probably wouldn't be so hard about, like, you need to watch it. But I just know you're a Stephen King girl. And I tell you, it is the darkest Stephen King by far. The craziest, darkest movie that I've seen personally.
Not
what I expected going into it with a title like Pet Sematary. I was like, oh my God. It was kind of like giving goosebumps to me. I was like, this is going to be fun. Right. No, no.
Well, you just reminded me too that something I could have said. I just started reading Salem's Lot for the first time. So,
cool.
Yeah. Oh
my God. Stephen King. Both of us have had a Stephen
King. Welcome to Derry came out last night.
I didn't even realize that came out until like a Real Rejects reaction channel, like their first episode reaction popped up in my feed and I was like, oh shit, that's out. Because I knew
so excited.
There's been some hype around that.
I'm so okay, sorry. I just
got is that for yourself or do you think you might do a reaction?
I'm flirting with the idea of doing it.
I'm excited.
I'm so excited.
I really want you to get into like little horror TV stuff because it's
Me
so fun.
Too.
Because I know that you have mentioned it before and I'm like, oh yeah, that would be cool.
This might be the moment.
That could be a good gateway, yeah.
Oh my God. Sorry, you just got me so excited because I just remembered that came out and
I'm feeling this. It's October 27th and this was a good spooky pick-me-up that we've just had here today.
I'm so happy.
You guys can check us out on Instagram at I'd Survive Podcast. We have a bunch of links over there, including one to our Discord where you can submit your own scores and let us know, would you survive?